Welcome back. Welcome back. What's that, Cotter?
Welcome back, Cotter. Yes. Yeah.
Knowing our age. Speaking of, well, no, we'll speak of age later. What did you, I did want to, we don't have to do it right now, but I did want to mention there were a lot of committee meetings during our, the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. And I sometimes check them out, but I haven't been checking them
okay,
out.
Okay. I watched, yeah, traffic enforcement, tree ordinance, and then municipal broadband. So maybe we should save some time because that was interesting.
Actually, maybe look, if you would be so kind as to fill me in a little bit on some of these right now. So for example, municipal broadband.
That's the one that interests me the most. It was a report. They wanted, it's the
was this neighborhood and long-term planning committee?
I can't even pronounce that whole long name.
Yeah.
They wanted a report on the status of the RFP because that's supposed to be delivered soon because, you know, the council.
Request for proposals.
Exactly. Okay. So they had Pat McCormick, who I guess was on the original municipal, the task force that Saul and some other people were on. And then Lee Gianetti is on that. And then, oh, wait, they're talking about the digital equity study. That's still in process. So, yeah.
And the digital equity study or whatever comes of it is, I think, something that has basically universal support.
Yes.
Whatever it turns out to be. The real question is, should the city invest large sums of money in creating the actual infrastructure for broadband?
Right. So, yeah, in February, the council passed the order for a feasibility study. So that's what...
That's what the RFP is for.
Right. Okay. So the there wasn't a lot of public comment, but there was, you know, Saul spoke and then, what interested me was
that's Saul Tannenbaum for those, yeah, not, for those of you from New Jersey.
Yeah. Oh, stop that. All right. And then, but what I was intrigued me, cause you know, Christopher Schmidt, who speaks a lot on this and Upgrade Cambridge, which is all, and Roy Russell, who's also Upgrade Cambridge. But he was the first one, Christopher Schmidt, to mention about cable television or TV, that there's some people that still are concerned, but he prefaced it like older people. In other words, I'm in that demographic, you know, and I'll probably be gone soon. So who cares? But, you know, and I'm glad at least he brought it up because people don't realize that not everybody wants to stop, you know, not everyone's going to stream 25 different platforms, you know, like cut the cord. So, and that will be have to be provided by someone that provides those services. So, so basically, the business model that I think people are proposing, which I think you and I saw, is that the city own the infrastructure, but someone else, you know, you hire different people to manage it or whatever. And we both agree that we need competition, right?
Yes.
We can't just have Comcast. So, and I think people agree with that, that we need, but people kept throwing out like Patty Nolan, but Braintree has it and Norwood has it. We're behind. And then Concord and then Santa Monica. And I looked at all those places and the three of those, Braintree, they own their light companies, you know, and people seem to forget that the people that have gone ahead with this a lot, Chattanooga, they had municipal light electric plants or whatever you want to call them, right?
And so they were already in the infrastructure business to begin with.
Exactly. They were already at. So that is a big difference. Now, Santa Monica, which Dennis Carlone brought up, and I hadn't heard of that. I looked at that. They were laying fiber. Now, we have fiber here. We have fiber in some of our. Okay. They laid fiber all over the city. I forget. It's very complicated. And then they just put it out. They have like three or four internet providers, internet slash TV providers. They have Comcast. They have Spectrum. So that's a good model because they have the platform. I mean, not the platform, but they have the because they were already doing it. And I think we can do that. I think we could do that, but we need to figure out what it costs.
Yeah. I mean, that's essentially the model that makes sense. You know, the question is how large are the capital costs to do it? But the idea would be that the city would build and own the roadway. And then the companies would basically be the vehicles.
And again, you know, and then some people say, well, it should be free for people. But I think it should be, you know, a housing, that Cambridge housing building stuff. Yeah, let's have that conduit free. First of all, they have the conduit in some of those buildings. I could see that having reduced or something there. But other people, if you start adding, if you want TV and if you want the highest speed, It's not, go look at Concord, folks. I mean, if you want TV and stuff, it's going to be about 100 and something. I mean, you're not, not everything is going to be that cheap.
One of the most serious problems with having kind of a Comcast monopoly is really the fact that you don't have options. And it's basically, if I, you know, for example, if I, you know, because yes, I'm one of those older people that wants to have cable TV, right? And in doing that, if I wanted to just get some movies, you know, or movies and Red Sox games and old Twilight Zone episodes and things like that, if I wanted to have that be mine, they'll say, I'm sorry, we don't make that package that you like available. We only will sell you at high cost.
Right.
The this package that has 99% of crap I don't even want.
Right.
And we have no flexibility. If it was a municipal own the infrastructure, we might have negotiating power, basically, to require them to do
something. You would bring in probably more than just Comcast. The point is, you could bring in other people who could offer different, or you could do the thing that some people do, cut the cord and all that, and get your movies, or get, if you want to do that. I don't mind paying what I pay, because I get quality. I mean, I like HBO, I like Showtime, I like the doc, I mean, I get Netflix through that. So I'm just saying, and there's people that are always going to be able to pay, you know, but I want the options. And so I do hope the city comes up with some good.
My perception all along has been that if there was a competitor who was offering you the options that somebody like me would actually want, the Comcast people would have to say, oh, we better offer that too, in order to retain our customers. So the thing is, the competition, even if you end up still doing your business with Comcast,
that's right,
ends up actually making Comcast a better player too.
Right. So private public partnership, it seems to, and the bigger city, like San Francisco, Seattle, I looked at, you know, those are Los Angeles people, they own also Chinatown. They own power. They own the water and the light system.
And I thought it was Mr. Mulray. Yeah, no, that's a reference to the movie Chinatown.
I just, you know, there's now the last thing I'll say is, you know, I'm sure people in the know, Muni Networks, which is part of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance or something, they follow all of these broadband things around the country. And, you know, when someone throws out like Christopher, well, there's 700 communities that have municipal broadband, you got to look at what kind do they have. Are they rural cooperatives? Do they own the power? Is it just the, you know, it's all. And so I'm just saying, yes, let's get a good study.
I agree.
Let's lay that, you know, you dig once, you lay the, we should be doing that.
And, you know, and one of the things that, in addition to what the real options are, I want to get a good number to what the actual capital costs would be for doing this. Granted, I don't think that's all going to just be sort of tapped into the taxpayers. I think there would be some bondings. There would be partnering up with another entity, you know, to do these sorts of things. But I just want to see actual dollar figures.
And you could also, it doesn't jump on board, all out. It could be, if you really are concerned about the digital divide, let's pay attention to that. Get that fiber to communities, or get it available and hot, whatever, first. Because that's what's actually, somebody brought that up, because anything like this is going to take a long time to. So what do you do now for the digital divide? And I guess there has been some money given, I guess, for families to get online, or to get, I don't know. I just,
you know, the great wild card for me has always been this fear. I wouldn't even call it a fear, but this sort of concern that, you know, should the city invest $200 million to go and build out some kind of infrastructure, and then 6 months later, somebody comes by with the next big thing, which is
some,
and then it basically makes this whole investment relatively obsolete.
Yeah, Pat McCormick did not seem to think that was going to be an issue, because that Quentin Zondervan did bring that up in terms of like 5G, could that, like, everyone's going wireless, whatever. But I still think that. It is to be considered, but I think that the fiber thing is not going away either, but I don't know.
Yeah. No. But anyway, that's my concern.
Okay. All right. Well,
there was also a tree or
tree, yeah, I listened to some of that. I didn't listen. There was a presentation by a BU intern or somebody that.
I actually get a little confused by a lot of it, because I know there's this tree canopy master plan thing. There's a tree ordinance that is in temporary moratorium stage now, though there is actually a permanent one already in place too. What will be the permanent replacement for the temporary moratorium situation?
I didn't finish that committee meeting, so I don't know how it ended up. I have to figure that out. But
well, it'll be interesting to sort of see where that goes, you know. And I mean, I'm a property owner and I do have some trees. I do have some concerns. My only real concern, because I think we all like having trees, but the thing is that to whatever degree city ordinances tie your hands unnecessarily, when you want to do a reasonable thing, and then some city councilor basically makes a declaration, I'm sorry, we know what's best. Well, we have decided that for the greater good of the people, that somehow we cannot allow you to manage trees in the way you see fit. We will tell you how to
But you have to pay for it, because if you want them, you know, to take, or you have to get an arborist to declare whether it's sick or can be, you know.
And that but then they want you also to drop a big pile of money into a free fund to replace it. And I say, but listen, I'm taking it down to allow other trees to flourish.
Yeah.
Why do you want me to also then pay you a bunch of money? That to me just seems like a shakedown.
So. Is that permanent, that language, or is that?
I don't know. I know that there is some sort of tree replacement fund or whatever, but I do have some concerns about that.
Yeah.
You know. So I just heard an elephant come roaring into the room. I don't know what that was.
You know what? I was wondering if I live right on Franklin Street here. That was somebody rushing along the street. You heard that, huh?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it was pretty funny, actually.
My little Mac here. My little All right.
Well, it's got a good microphone. There we go. All right. So anyway, so that's some of the things that have been happening in the committee meetings. It's actually, in a way, kind of nice to see some of those things happening.
There's
a bunch of ordinance committee ones that we don't need to go into now that are in the queue for the next few months. But some of the other things that was a little bit interesting, at least at city council meeting last night, it was one thing I say, you know, being just sort of a civic nerd, there's this always this eternally growing list of waiting report items. And the manager actually came back with a flurry of them.
A lot of them, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Finally coming back. Because, you know, I mean, I'm kind of a big fan that you should never leave something languishing for more than many months there. But they actually have items sitting there awaiting report going back to 2016.
Why isn't that just, why don't they just deal with that?
Like, you know, partly because it was something that somebody sort of, you know, just chucked it out in the thin air and said, manager, respond. The manager said, well, I think this, the manager's probably thinking, well, this is wacky, but I don't want to say no, because then they'll get mad at me. So I'll just leave it there. But you know, there does come a point where if the manager is not really going to act positively on a suggestion,
you should say that.
Then they should just come back with a little itty bitty one paragraph saying, we have decided that this is not something we wish to pursue at this time.
Like the Supreme Court, don't they do that if they don't want to take on a case?
That's right. We're not going to review this. You know, but it's just sort of, it's not really a great thing just to leave these things languishing that way, you know. So anyway, I was glad there was some responses. One of them actually had to do with a proposal that grew, I think it kind of initially happened when the pandemic was first really sinking in, having to do with social distancing. Remember when it was all about, we need to close some streets, we need to do this.
We can't go past anybody,
Right, but then it was also, the idea was that, why shouldn't everybody be able to just basically do anything and everything they want on the golf course, Fresh Pond Golf Course? And I kind of knew right off the bat that that was not going to...
Wait, did that get proposed because people weren't golfing right then? It was in March or April?
I think that sometimes, you know, because of a situation like that, then people get the idea. And of course, at the time when people were not golfing, if somebody wanted to go wandering across the golf course, nobody was going to stop them. And I don't think there was anything that would have, there was no rule saying you couldn't.
Right.
But then the idea came, well, why can't people just traverse it in the weekend, or not weekends, but like the week, toward evenings or on certain days of the week and whatever. And I thought, you know, I don't think so. But the rhetoric I do find interesting, because, you know, it's a kind of a brand of rhetoric that I've been hearing a lot in Cambridge lately, and not just Cambridge, but definitely in Cambridge, which is this sort of equity gone crazy, meaning that you've got open space up there, meanwhile, there are people in, you know, this other part of the city, they don't have any open space. Why should these golfers, because they're willing to pay green fees, why do they have exclusive access? And they're kind of cast it all as some kind of a great elitist conspiracy to keep the people out. You know?
It's a public golf course. I mean, I don't know what the fees are. Are they expensive? I don't know.
I don't know. I think it's probably more expensive than I would be happy to. By the way, it was really kind of charming when Mayor Siddiqui, when the issue came up last night, she mentioned that she had been yesterday,
at the
day
end,
before, she had gone.
In
Dedham.
Oh,
and said that was a lot of fun. You know?
Okay.
And I'm just a...
Oh, because that was your participatory budget.
I just sort of point that out. I've been sort of... Yeah. Some people think it's me. I'm saying it purely as a joke, but I'm really not. I've been saying to the planners from MIT and the real estate people down in the Kendall Square projects in Volpe area, I said, where are you going to put the miniature golf course?
You know, that makes sense in Kendall Square, actually.
I'm telling you, you know, if these gray-suited... nice folks, but if they could kind of break out of the gray suits a little bit and understand how popular and incredibly cool it would be if instead of having some dank concrete corridor between buildings, you actually had a miniature golf course that weaved its way between the buildings.
Like a skating rink.
Like a skating rink. But the thing is,
you'd pay a nominal fee to use
you
it.
You could actually make it just be free. But the thing is,
it be free? But you have to have someone give out balls and clubs and stuff.
Well, you can bring your own. You could do that.
I'll disagree.
If you want to rent a club and some balls, you could do that. Or you can bring your own. I just think, so I had this notion that you could actually have 18 holes weaving its way around buildings. And every hole would be actually done by an artist.
Oh, wait a minute now. You're saying weaving around buildings so that hit one into a window?
I assure you, in miniature golf, nobody's teeing off like that.
Okay, I think a controlled space. I don't see it going around buildings. That's
right. Well, I just think that would be kind of an interesting way to sort of do the architecture of the Volpe area.
That is not going to happen.
Yeah, and it would absolutely put the place on the map. People would talk about it all around the country. They would say, well, that's pretty cool.
How about rollerblading around a building?
Well, you could do that today, I suppose. But I think it's ideas like that don't usually see the light of day because it doesn't quite fit into the boringness that
I'm glad you clarified that because I didn't hear the whole thing. I said, she went golfing in Dedham. So maybe she's – but now
– No, she played putt-putt. But anyway, yes, it is true. I put in for that as an idea in participatory budgeting. Yeah. It actually had a lot of positive responses, which was very nice to see. I hope it makes the cut. So it's actually put in there as one of the candidates.
When does that come out? The actual.
Normally it would be happening in around December, but I believe if it may be delayed this year because of everything else, you know.
All right.
So anyway, the idea phase of participatory budgeting is over. And now they are the vetting of the proposals happening. And then eventually I don't know how many candidates they put up, to put people to a vote, but then that will eventually happen, you know. And there are some pretty good ideas out there too, but mine's the best. All right. But anyway, the resolution of Fresh Pond Golf Course is the manager pretty much just said, look, we're not going to open this up to the public, just helter skelter. But when the golf season is over, everybody should feel free to come across.
And I think it was recommended there should be signs to that effect because
there should be more outreach.
People felt like you were trespassing if in the winter.
Yeah.
Helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. So they'll put out more outreach to let people know, listen, it's not golf season, it's perfectly cool to go cross country skiing or otherwise frolicking on the golf course after the golfers are gone, you know. And to me, that's fine. You know, the thing is that we have basketball courts where you have to play basketball. You have soccer fields where you play soccer, baseball fields where you play baseball. You have a golf course where people play golf, you know.
I see.
you know, it's yeah. it's not a bad thing that there are some sort of separated uses like that. It's
right. And it is right next to Fresh Pond where you can walk.
Seriously. Yeah.
Come on, you know.
Yeah, the folks in the western part of the Cambridge, they got nothing to complain about, yeah, seriously.
And then the other, you know, you've got the Charles River, you know.
That's there too, yeah. Now, a couple of other items that came up on the city council meeting last night, yeah. which I think are interesting, and in a way, interesting because it was finally getting some movement on certain things that have been lingering for a long time.
Yeah.
One of which had to do with there have been proposals about vacant buildings or more specifically vacant storefronts.
Right.
And there were some proposals a couple of years ago that would have actually imposed fines so outrageous, like right. they would have basically been trying to take half the assessed value of the property per right. year, which there's no way that would have passed constitutional muster, but right. doesn't stop councilors from proposing things.
Yeah.
But the thing is that so they're finally coming back down. And I thought Iram Farooq from the Community Development Department was really spot on in describing, you know, when people, I think it was Sabrina Wheeler was getting like, well, why should be, you know, whacking these people with heavy fines for doing that. And she basically became the voice of reason saying, look, if you start imposing nasty fines on people, the big guys, they just absorb it, write it off as a loss. It's not really going to hurt them. But the littler players, actually, it could really hurt them a lot. And that, she pretty much said in not so many words, I don't think that's what the council policy is really about. Yeah. So, yes, I think there may be some sort of fines, but better than that, I think you're just going to see a little bit more attention paid by the economic development people within Community Development Department, basically to, you know, to kind of help work with these properties to sort of make good things happen.
And it is public. I guess every quarter they publish. Of those places. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And so in other words, if you know that they're there and then you can actually help steer potential commercial tenants toward them, you can help the property owners out, you know, and maybe even some of the potential tenants will help do the sort of capital investment necessary to bring the properties up to a good state too, you know. There's a lot of good possibilities as long as you work with people. So I actually felt very good about the Community Development Department on that particular issue. Another item, really two items that came up in front on the council agenda that were similar, you know, in the category of things we've been waiting a long time for. Yeah. I don't know how long we've been talking about the so-called table of uses.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Right. Which needed to be updated. You know, there are certain things that are kind of almost archaic at this point.
Right.
Either prohibitions or allowances, allowed uses that were laid out during a very different time, whether it's fast food establishments, you mm-hmm. can't do this, you can do that. Yeah. I've heard some stories of uses which no reasonable person could possibly explain why this was allowed, but that wasn't. I think I made a joke about it, like, well, you're allowed to sell jelly donuts, but no cream filled donuts. Well, it's not quite that bad, but
the whole thing with fast food, yeah.
We really needed to have a kind of a wholesale view, you know, a reevaluation of what's good and not good. I mean, even in this like Central Square, there was a question, maybe in the Central Square overlay district, could you have a dentist's office in Central Square? And the answer was no, it's not an allowed use. They need to get a variance. Huh. Well, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, I understand you don't want to turn active retail storefronts into, you know, offices and things that are not sort of places you can go in and buy stuff. But still, certain things, I think there's a pretty serious need for some revision. Yeah. And I don't know what all the particular changes proposed are. But I just think I'm glad that this is now going in front of the ordinance committee and they're finally at a point where they can actually make some movement.
Right.
You know, so anyway, so that's long overdue and mm-hmm. very, very welcome. There was another one. It was, you know, I didn't even think about it. So there's actually two zoning proposals that are now in the queue come of this. The other one had to do with what they call home occupations.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And I didn't read through that exactly what that means. And I, you know, have to admit, I don't know enough about that, but you know, I kind of you can't help but think, though, you know, it's like every home is like a home office right now, right? You know,
right.
You know, whether if you're a teacher, your home is a school building. You know, if you're
tax wise, though, you can't. It's not that easy.
No, that's right. That's right. So there are certain things.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So you're not going to be put under the tax classification as commercial property because you work.
No, but a home based business, there is a tax deduction. I'm sure this year, a lot of people are probably going to try to use it because they work, which is legitimate. But that's
yeah, totally. Yeah. You know, but anyway, I think, you know, the rapidly changing, maybe for the short term, maybe for the longer term, but the rapidly changing notions about what constitutes a workplace.
Right.
You know, I hope that that's part of the conversation. I don't know what there's anything the city can do or should do to make it better or worse, but they could. I mean, generally speaking, I've long found, you know, there's once upon a time when they were first instituting zoning laws, you know, a lot of it was about sort of keeping noxious uses away, you know, so you didn't want to have the, you know, the pork rendering plant next to the kindergarten, right? That's what people would say, right? But the thing is that at some point they became so prescriptive, you know, where, you know, if you're not in the table, damn it, you can't do your business here because we only allow this to be sold and not that, but yes, this, but not that.
Right.
And, you know, I think maybe we could do well to have a little less prescription, you know, a little more flexibility, a little more, you know, a little less regulation, but enough, you know.
All right, Robert, we have about 45 seconds left. I just want to mention to some people that you can drop off your compost at 5 different places because this came up during the COVID report. And, you know, you could take a bike or you could walk or use your car. And there's Hoyt Center. There's the Danahy Park, New Street. There's Kennedy Longfellow School, temporary, DPW, permanent, and Peabody School, temporary. So there's 5 places. No excuse. Don't throw it out.
Right. That's right. And one day we'll have curbside pickup again. So
right.
In the meantime, we're good.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. So
all
right.